There's so many opportunities in this great game that keep this community going. Referees are a big push right now because like the numbers are dwindling, right? So if there's anyone listening that's on the fence, go be a referee. It's a great way to stay connected to the football community.
Hello and welcome to At the 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics with another installation of Draft Stores. We are highlighting players who have made the jump from OUA to the CFL and seeing what their experience is like as we get set for the 2024 CFL Draft. We have an awesome guest on our hands, Tom. The privilege is all yours. So, Tom, how the heck you doing, my friend?
Anytime we have a guest as special as this one, I'm always doing fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, the 2015 CIS Academic All-Canadian and OUA Men's Football All-Rookie Team, 2017 U Sports Academic All-Canadian, 2018 OUA Second Team All-Star, U Sports Academic All-Canadian, and probably the most impressive of all, winner of the undoubtedly best Yates Cup in Yates Cup history in 2016, number 20, Scott Hutter. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And it's great that you bring up 2016. I work out, I'm from London. I spend my off seasons in London, and I work out with a bunch of Western guys that were both during that era and after that era. So we talk about that 2016 game a lot. Well, at least I do. I make them listen about it. So
you best believe we're going to be talking to you about that 2016 game as well, so you can rub it in their faces again.
Well, and Scott, of course, you know, as per my time in London, I had to throw on the South football gear. You're an AB Lucas guy. You know that rivalry obviously better than I do from my short time there. And the London football thing beyond just Western is huge. And when we talk about growing the game, it's a model. We were talking a bit beforehand of just the excellence of that grassroots program, and you being a product of it, I think is an awesome thing to be able to share. And it's great that, as you were saying, and we'll get to again, that you're sharing those experiences with the folks at the CFL, realizing that this is a place they need to be targeting more so. But we're talking about that 2016 year, and obviously your journey to getting on the Elks. You're rocking the gear there, loving the cap with the colors, and you know, connecting with Laurie. Here's the thing I want to talk about. It relates to 2016. It relates to the draft. The just amount of immensely talented defensive players that this program has seemingly had for at least a decade now, going back to Tom and my playing years, your time there, and it's sticking to this day. So you're in that 2016 team, and like I went back to that roster and I started jotting down names, and I ran out of space where we're looking at names like Malcolm Thompson, Godfrey Onyeka, a young Christian Hutter Coppin, Will Amoa, Kwaku Boateng, Robbie Smith, Nakas Onyeka, Sam Achampong, Trayvon James, Jalen Price, a young Shamari Hutchinson. Like the list goes on, not to mention on the other side, you know, you got a dude in Curly Gittens Jr. with Michael Neville and Lavondre Gordon. Like that team was beyond stacked. And of course, on the defensive side of the ball that you were obviously such a an immense part of, just flooded with names, many of whom joined you in the ranks of that fraternity of CFLers. What is the biggest thing that kind of comes to mind when you think of your time at Laurier with those players you got to go to battle with?
I mean, and I always say this when I talk to people about Laurier, it's no secret that that school doesn't have the best resources. It's the smallest football playing school in Ontario. I'm glad to see that they're finally investing in their athletic department and finally building a new field and a new stadium in the next couple of years. Hopefully bringing the facilities up to par with what the athletes require and what the athletes frankly deserve. But I was very proud to go to Laurier, but you know, they can coach. The staff under Michael Faulds and in my time there, Dwayne Cameron, and still there, Ron Van Moerkirk, our defensive coordinator, I think probably the longest serving defensive coordinator in the OUA, dating back to early 2000s. He was even coaching there, the 2005 Vanier Cup team. But yeah, they know how to coach and they know how to develop players. we always prided ourselves. It was a group of young men that none of us were the highest recruited players. My recruiting class, my first year at Laurier was 2015. The 2 years that was Coach Falls' third season as the head coach, and the two previous years they had been 1-7 and 4-4. And what the talking point was when he was recruiting all of us was, "Hey, this is on the right trajectory. We get some of the right pieces in here and develop, and we're gonna make a run at things." And that 2015 year, we go 4-4. We lose in the semifinals, the OUA semifinals. My second year, 2016, as you alluded to, we won the Yates Cup, ran into the buzzsaw that is the Laval Rouge Or in Quebec City the following week. Next year, go back to the Yates Cup, 2017, run into the buzzsaw that was the future Vanier Cup champion, Western Mustangs, in the Yates Cup. And then 2018, unfortunately, went 4-4 again and missed the playoffs. But I experienced a lot of success at that school, team-wise, and it wasn't because we had the big fancy stadium. It wasn't because we had state-of-the-art weight room. It wasn't because we had this, that, and the other thing. It was because we had a group of young men come together in a locker room that really felt a sense of community and really felt a sense of team, and because we had great coaching. And I think you still see that. There was a couple of years there where Laurier wasn't having so much success, but clearly they're back to the Yates Cup this past year. And unfortunately, in the second half, kind of let the game slip away. I was at that game and it broke my heart. But back to where we think of Laurier football needing to be, and it's because they can coach. Like that coaching staff is unbelievable for what they've been able to accomplish with little to no facilities. And it's great to see that the university is finally stepping up and giving those athletes and that coaching staff some newer facilities that should help in the recruiting process.
Going through this and talking to so many people from the great University of Laurier, alumni like yourself, or people who are currently playing there, like Taylor Elgersma, I couldn't quite figure it out myself why I personally was so drawn to Laurier, despite the fact that 2015, on your run to that semifinal, you beat me at home in Ron Joyce Stadium pretty good there. And then in 2016, once again, we lose to Laurier, my final game ever, wearing the maroon and gray. So on paper, I should hate Laurier and hate this team, but the mentality that you guys have, that we don't need the fancy stuff. We're going to go to work with whatever is there. If we have to lift logs because we don't have a weight room, we're going to do that. We're going to beat the tar out of anybody that we come across. And I think living in Hamilton and having that same kind of mentality of, this is a Hamilton Steel City town, we're going to go to work, and we're going to do whatever we have to. I think Laurier really emulates that the more and more that I talk to people, and I respect the hell out of that kind of mentality of, we don't need anything fancy. We're just going to work with what we have and we'll still win. Going off of that, we're looking at the 2016 season here. Obviously, you're coming into this after that loss to Western in that semifinal game the year prior. You go out to Montreal in a preseason game. What was that like, going through that training camp with the team that would eventually be the Yates Cup champions, and then going out to play against Montreal and seeing the RSEQ and playing against them in a preseason game?
Yeah, it was interesting. Obviously, the Q is notorious for having older players because of the whole Cégep route that they have to take. So we knew the competition was going to be great. The previous year in 2015, we had flown out to Saskatchewan to play the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon. But my last 3 years, our preseason, we always took a bus trip up to Quebec to play. We played Montreal in 2016, we played Concordia in 2017, and we played McGill in 2018. And I always loved those trips. Those were always great. It was always right at the end of training camp, right? You're grinding with the guys for a week and a half, however long, I'm forgetting how long OUA training camps are, but then you get to go on a bus trip and it's a long drive to Montreal, but It was always a great trip. It was always a good time to get to know some of the newer faces on the team because it's a preseason game. You take so many freshmen, so many new players that are coming into your system. And it was always a good time to kind of gel right before the season.
Now, Scott, going back to the London piece of this, of you being, from that system and kind of connecting it with the transition into CFL, because when we connected both kind of, I guess it was a year or 2 years ago, I can't remember exactly when, I'm coaching with the Junior Mustangs, you're back home helping out. And what I appreciated so much, and it was simultaneously so frustrating, is you doing all this speed work with these kids, where it's the level of work that it's almost like some of them are too young to realize that this is actually what you need to be doing to get truly fast. Those things where I think a lot of kids, you just think, well, I'll go out, I'll run some 40s, or I'll work on my cardio. All those specifics of, the explosion of your hip flexor, using the bands, all these types of multilateral movements. And I bring all that up because obviously we're in combine season or coming off combine season with a lot of folks getting ready to, hopefully live out their dreams as you've been doing so for the last five or so years. What are some of the things that when you think about how you prep for the combine, the things you've learned now, and when you work with young athletes, that you're really trying to press in terms of the way you have to train to really get to that next level where it's like, yeah, sure, we can go out, we can run, we can lift some weights, we can do all those things, but the way that, again, I would watch you work with these young kids where it's all these, the devil's in the details, and it's all these things that for so many people, it's beyond what most people would think of in terms of getting speed. What are some of those things that you look back, and whether it's talking to a younger version of yourself or young athletes that I know you're still working with, having spent some time with the Junior Mustangs, you're really trying to impart in them in terms of like finding that next gear?
Well, I would just bring it back to my own experience, and I never played summer football growing up. I was always a baseball guy in the summer, so my high school experience playing football was all I had. I had 4 years of high school, and then I went into university. So I was very raw, and I really, like a lot of high school athletes, I really thought the key to success in football and getting stronger was just loading up more weight every week on the bar and just lifting weights. And just, next week I'll lift heavier weights, and then the next week I'll lift heavier weights. And that's, clearly not what you should be doing as an athlete at any level. But I was in high school, I didn't know any better, and I didn't have anyone there to really show me the way to do any better. Now, fortunately for me, I've had since then, my journey through Laurier to the present day, had an experience with a multitude of really good strength and conditioning trainers. The first, well, many throughout my years, and I don't want to call anyone out specifically, but really the first one that kind of changed how I started to look at things was Jesse Collins of Collins Athletic Performance in Waterloo, Ontario. You see all the great numbers that Laurier guys and Waterloo guys are putting up at combines year after year. Most of that is him. Most of that is like not just him. Obviously, the athletes are doing much of the work too, but most of that is coming out of his system. And I trained with him for a couple years in the summertime during my time at Laurier, just because I saw a bunch of CFL guys coming back and working out with him. And I said, well, if that's where I want to go and he's doing good stuff for them, then that's where I want to be. So I was able to learn a lot from working with and for Jesse Collins. Now I'm back in London now, and we're working with Dave Mackey of the BC Lions. We've got a good group of CFL guys that Dave trains here. Dave's also doing the Western football team right now, so he's a busy guy, but also great trainer, and I've learned a lot from Dave. And I really the two guys and other trainers that I've had that are the best of the best, I always like to say that they're nerds. They're strength and conditioning nerds. They're always talking about what new stuff that they're reading, and they're not getting comfortable with, well, we've been doing this for a long time, so let's just keep it. They're always just trying to tweak and say, oh, what's the new study coming out, or the new data coming out. And that's what I really started to take into account. And like you said, like I've been fortunate enough to be helping out, working with some minor football here in London through the Junior Mustangs. The last 3 years, I've spent my off seasons here just trying to help out, give back to the community that I grew up in. And so I'm just trying to, you know, instill some of those principles that I've learned from some of these great trainers into them at a young age. So hopefully it's not when they get to university or they get to say CJFL or wherever they're going, that it's not the first time that someone's telling them, hey, this is how you know, sprint properly, or this is how you train to be fast, or, you know, this is how you properly, lift weights, or this is how you, you know, do a mobility circuit, so you know your joints don't hurt, and like stuff like that, right? Like, these are all very important things that I think young athletes are missing, because a lot like myself, I just thought it was, let's just lift more and more weight and then you'll get big and strong and that's how you'll be a good football player.
And so sticking on that same idea of training properly, especially as somebody like yourself who, like you said, was training in that let's just rack them up and keep lifting as heavy as possible, to training the right way and finding a great rhythm for yourself. Did you notice a drastic increase to your own personal performance where when you're moving better on the field? What was that process like between your actual playing experience before you started training really, really well, and then afterwards?
Well, absolutely. And you just, you know, you, a couple of the big things were starting to take diet and sleep and, you know, mobility into more of the forefront of what I'm actually doing. And a lot of that actually came during my pro career, as I look for ways to extend my pro career and do whatever I can to be at the top of my game. But definitely, like, I think, like any athlete, you start to put in more of the right type of work. It's not just more work, it's more of the right type of work. And you're definitely going to see some of those differences in your body and in your game.
Working smart, not hard, is always a good recipe. So let's get there to that transition into the pro stage for you. Sixth round, 50th pick overall, a draft in which you got to see your guy Robbie Smith go in the second round. You see Curly go in the third round, and literally right after you, your guy Mauro Villamizar go. You know, let's just start with that evening. Where were you? Were you with family, friends? Were you with your Laurier guys? Obviously, it was a big night for Laurier football. Like, take us back to that moment of hearing your name get selected.
Yeah, so I was back here in London. I was still in school. It was the end of my fourth year at Laurier. So I had driven home to be with my family and watch, you know, with a couple friends and my family. It was a small gathering, and you know, TSN notoriously only does like the first two rounds or whatever. So I, like you said, I was a six round guy, and I wasn't even sure that I was going to get drafted. I was, well, I might get picked up. I've had some calls with GMs over the last couple of days, you know, trying to sort out some details, and I might get picked up. I might be a free agent invite to camp. We'll see what happens. So I kept it small. It wasn't like a big, like, hoorah moment. But then, you know, you're just watching the ticker, right? I don't even think they did the live stream at that point to continue with the rounds. It was just the online, the ticker, you know, and it goes pick by pick and the name pops up, and then you wait like 5 minutes and the next name pops up. And then, so I was sitting there waiting, and we're just, you know, this is hours into watching all of these names go across the board. And my phone rang, and you know, it's that classic, like, oh, you know, my phone's ringing, and this is probably a very important call because it's not a number that I recognize. And so I answer it, and it was Jason Moss of then, you know, we were called the Edmonton Eskimos. And he said, yeah, do you want to come play in Edmonton? And I was like, yeah, love to. They just like, hey, well, we're gonna pick you up here. And I got to talk to the then GM at that time, Brock Sutherland, and it was a short conversation, but it was amazing. It was like everything that people always tell you that it's that classic, like, oh my God, like this is actually happening. And then of course my mom cried because Edmonton's so far, and but no, it was a joyous occasion. It was fantastic. It was a great feeling. And then because you put in all that work to go through the combines and then to go through draft prep and whatnot, but then your focus immediately shifts to, well, okay, I got to go make this team now, because nothing is guaranteed, especially when you're picked up as a sixth round Canadian in the CFL. So your focus shifts very quickly to, oh my God, great, I did this. Okay, now I got to go make the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And so sticking on that same route between the actual training of it, right before we get into your career at with Edmonton here, I wanted to talk a little bit about your combine experience. You end off a phenomenal career at Laurier. I listed off a lot of the accolades that you racked up while you were there, the Yates Cup championships, and the amazing memories I'm sure that you made there. What was that combine process for you like? And how was the transition between training for the combine, getting that, hearing your name, and getting that phone call for that draft, and then switching that? Or do you continue on that same training route in terms of getting ready to make the team, like you said?
Yeah, well, I'm gonna use the word lucky. Now I'm gonna tell you the story. You might not think it was lucky, but I think it was lucky because it set me up for great success mentally, I think. I wasn't an East West guy. My third year, didn't get an invite to East West. Wasn't a national combine guy. Got invited to the regional combine. At that time, it was the three combines, right? It was the Ontario regional, the Western regional, and the Eastern regional. So I got invited to the Ontario regional at University of Toronto, and did my thing, put up some numbers, did some drills, and then that was it. Didn't get an invite to the national combine. So sitting there, put together 4 years worth of film, regional combine, which I thought I did okay at, but didn't light anything up. And then, no East West, like whatever, one time second team OUA All-Star. So you're kind of sitting there and like, okay, like I've done everything that I can to put myself in this opportunity. I've trained as hard as I can. I've, played as hard as I can. I don't have any regrets going into this process. Whatever happens, happens. But it wasn't like I was, upper echelon, top of the food chain. Definitely this guy is getting picked up in the first round. So I mean, when I did get picked up, and that was still the case, like come in and make the team, it was much of the same mentality. Just, okay, I'm gonna put my head down, I'm gonna bring my hard hat and my lunch pail, and I'm gonna go to work, and I'm gonna try and make this team. And fortunately enough, I did enough in that training camp to warrant a practice roster spot. And on the practice roster, I sat for half of my rookie season. I don't remember what week it was, but I remember I finally got activated against the Ottawa Red Blacks in Edmonton. Commonwealth Stadium was my first dress. And it was great. It was, nerve-wracking, everything. But that wasn't until like August. The CFL season starts in June. So for 2 months, I was just sitting there like practicing. For those of your listeners that don't know practice roster, right? You practice with the team, you lift with the team, you meet with the team. You don't get to play on game day. You stand there in street clothes. You don't get to travel with the team either. So they go on their road trips and you sit at home in Edmonton. But, 2 months I was putting in the work, like grinding hard, right? Staying, showing up early, staying late. I was really lucky. My DB coach my first year, he's now the defensive coordinator in Ottawa. His name is Baron Miles. He was a Hall of Fame, or is a Hall of Fame free safety in the CFL. Had 66 interceptions or something crazy like that in his career. And I would go into his office after every practice and watch every single rep, not just of myself, but every single rep that was done in practice every day that entire season, because I'm playing this guy's position. He's a Hall of Famer. I would have to be stupid not to listen to this guy. And he saw he opened my mind to like this whole new way of like looking at the game. And it was, that kind of that aha moment of like, oh, I don't know anything about this game. There's so much more knowledge that I could be amassing. And I think I was lucky that I'd mentioned that my mom was sad that I was going so far out to Edmonton, but I feel like I was lucky that I had to go so far from home, because I didn't have any distractions. I didn't have any friends nagging at me, hey, let's go do this. Like, I didn't have any family around. Like, I literally would show up in the morning of the facility, and I would stay all day, watch all the extra film, get all the extra lifting in, whatever, like just spend all day at the facility, and then go home at night, because I had nothing else to do. Like, I've built some connections out there since, because I've been fortunate enough to play 4 seasons out there. But at the time, like, I was, I didn't have anything else to do. So I was just like, I was a junkie. I was just in the facility all day, every day. And, that set me up for some really good habits, because, clearly I've done enough to stick around for 4 years going on 5 years.
Would you say then that jump going U sport to CFL in contrast to high school to U sport was more so the mental part of it and really becoming a master at your craft? Obviously, you've still grown, and we've talked about that strength, conditioning, mobility, the sleep, the nutrition piece of it obviously being a big thing. But do you find, and from conversations with colleagues, like, is that the bigger thing? Not to underplay the physicality of it, but at that point, is it really just becoming a master of the mental side of it?
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, like, it's the same. I remember when I left from high school to come to Wilfrid Laurier, and like, not to toot my own horn, but my grade 12 year, we went 12-0, won OFSA, and I was London High School football MVP. Like, I was pretty good. And then when I got to Laurier, or yeah, when I got to Laurier, I was like, at first training camp, I was like, oh my God, I don't know anything about football. Like, I'm terrible. Like, these guys are killing me. Like, I mean, you're 18 years old walking onto a university campus playing against, 23, 24 year olds that are really good, spent the last 4 or 5 years getting really good at football. And listening to coaches that have been doing this for a living for years, and like learning stuff that you had no idea even existed, right? And it's the same jump I found, because you play 4 years of university ball, and pretty good player, started a bunch of games, second team OUA All-Star in my senior year, and then you get to the CFL and you go, oh my God, I don't know anything about this game. It's the same. So it's the same kind of feeling. And it's just that, being able to absorb information and slow the game down, because it is that higher speed. So you need to be able to adjust to it and slow the game down mentally.
When you're going out into that first year, like you said, you get a chance to dress in August after a couple of months, chomping at the bit, really ready to go here. Do you have that classic, as people like to say, come to the CFL moment where you're, whether it's on practice or you stepping out onto the game field and you go, oh damn, these are pro athletes. This is what it means to be a CFLer.
I don't know if I really had like a surprise moment like that, like one particular, like, yeah, sure, you get rocked, like someone runs you over, or like there was a good one in that preseason, 2019 preseason, where Chris Streveler broke the pocket. We were playing in Winnipeg in one of the preseason games, and Chris Streveler broke the pocket, and I didn't really know anything about Chris Streveler at this point. But Chris Streveler doesn't slide. And I'm expecting kind of the quarterback to slide, and Chris Streveler lowers his shoulder and kind of runs me over. And I was kind of like, oh, okay. Now I know that that guy's not going to slide, in good transition, because he's back in Winnipeg now after his journey in the NFL. So now I know the wily vet, Chris Streveler's not going to slide. But yeah, I don't think there was one specific moment, maybe that, but we had a really good veteran team in 2019. Now it's been interesting, because COVID really really broke apart what was that veteran team. But we had Trevor Harris at quarterback. We had Greg Ellingson at wide receiver, guys that like had been there, done that. Matt O'Donnell was on the O-line. He had been there forever. Queens legend. Armando Sewell was still in Edmonton at that point. Ryan King was our long snapper, and he had been there forever. Calvin McCarty, our fullback, was there. He was, one of his last seasons there. And yeah, so it's just a really good veteran players that I was really able to watch and say, okay, like these guys have been in the league and here for a long time. What are they doing? Okay, they're doing all these things. Oh, I'm gonna do all of those things.
And now, of course, here you are as the vet, and obviously as your on-field production and role has no doubt grown. Of course, in more recent news, you're taking on this role as part of the CFL's mentorship program, and so clearly having some kind of insight into. Well, I guess I'll let you kind of talk about where that comes from. Whether it's a function of the players' representation standpoint, the business standpoint, no doubt a lot of aspects to this. What's sort of your mindset in addition to obviously still becoming the best version of the football player you are and contributing to winning with Edmonton? Is this kind of direction leading towards with your joining the CFL Mentors team?
Yeah, so I'll explain the program first off. If some of your
Yeah,
listeners
please.
haven't heard of it, it's a joint venture between the CFL and the CFLPA to really give the players, athletes, a look into potential careers outside of the game of football, or not outside the game of football, but after playing the game of football. This was their third year running it. You have to apply and get interviewed for this program. And seven of us were selected to spend a week in Toronto at CFL head office, go through boardroom meetings of their marketing team and their player ops team at the league office. And the commissioner came in and gave us a speech and basically every department that does something for the CFL gave us a PowerPoint presentation and was very open-ended with questions, and we had a lot of them because you're at the league office. Why would you not ask all the questions that has been building up in your brain for the last 4 years? And then we spent a day at TSN and being at the facility, the facility where they make the product that you see on TV, and talking to the producers. And that was a great experience. And then end the week, drove down to Waterloo, got to take part in the regional combine. So get to talk to a bunch of scouts, GMs, coaches, and really, put your scouting hat on for the day and kind of watch the drills up close and personal. The last combine that I had been a part of was my combine. And you're at the combine, you're not focused on what everyone else is doing, you're focused on what you're doing. So this was a nice opportunity to step back and kind of put your scout hat on and say, oh, what do I like that's going on here? Okay, well, who am I picking out of the crowd? And then kind of going back to my Edmonton's director of Canadian scouting and say, am I on here? Like, is I'm picking out this player, this player, this player. And he's like, yeah. Or like this guy, this guy, this guy. And we'd start talking about stuff like that. But it was a great week. Yeah, it was a great, great experience. I hope that the CFL and the CFLPA continue it, because I think it's a great opportunity and insight for players to see all the different career paths that are attached to the great game of football.
When you start to take a look at your journey through the CFL and even your journey in from your high school days, Laurier days, and now where you are here, do you feel like you have a responsibility in that sense to try to give back to some of the young guys who might be coming up here to try to give some guidance in that respect? Or, at the end of the day, this is a business. And if you're not careful, if you're helping to guide some of the people in that Edmonton locker room, well, hell, they might be good enough to try to take your job at one point here. What is that dynamic like when you're in that pro setting of that feeling of having to or wanting to try to give back in that way?
Well, absolutely. I mean, sure, it's a fine line, but like at the end of the day, number one goal is to win. Like that is why you play the game. And there's other aspects that certain guys might want to play for, money and fame and what. We're here to win. And unfortunately, the last couple of years in Edmonton, we have not been good. We've been a basement dweller. I'm sure that any Canadian football fan knows that. But it's still what you show up every day to do is win and work really hard to win and practice really hard to win. And so when you get new, fresh faces in the locker room, it's not, you can't spend time thinking about, well, I hope that guy doesn't get too good because he's going to come take my job. Well, no, we're trying to win. So I do hope he gets really good because I hope he gets really good so he can perform for the team and he can push me to be better. And then I can be better and then the whole team can be better. That's the mentality that winners have, and that's what you have to win. Or if you start looking around and checking over your shoulder, you're not going to last very long.
You know, Scott, now obviously we've talked about your London experience. You've been out in Edmonton now for, shoot, like a half decade about. And, you know, so much of what me and Tom's interest is when we talk about the growth of the game, which obviously you're a major part in now with, you know, with the mentors team and kind of seeing this other side of the game, is trying to get a sense of like, what are other provinces, because you know we care about our Ontario scene here and growing it here, but you know whether it's Quebec, whether it's out west, there's obviously kind of unique cultures and sort of subcultures of how football is played, or how it's just how it's celebrated, how it just is, I guess. And you being from London, you know, up there with the best football cultures in, you know, in Canada, certainly in Ontario, what are some of the things in some of perhaps the interactions with the football community out there that maybe compare or contrast with the things you experience as far as football here in Ontario and things that maybe we could be doing better, whether it's grassroots level or anything like that to help grow it, or things that maybe to bring out of Ontario to the way that the way football is out there?
I'll just say that, and it's my number one gripe with football fans and football players and football coaches in this country, is that you don't have to pick if you're a fan of the CFL or the NFL. You can be a fan of both. You can watch both games. They're not on at the same time. Watch both games. And I'll even take it a step further. The new UFL is coming on this weekend. I hope a bunch of people tune into that as well, because at the end of the day, more football opportunity is better for football players and coaches and executives and trainers. And it just, when you look at it this way, football on the world stage is still a very small sport. And I know that I'm guilty of it too, feeling the inferiority complex of, oh, I don't like the NFL because we're Canadian. You should watch the CFL. You can watch both and you can enjoy both. And you know what? If you really love football, you should be enjoying both and you should be taking in all of it, because it's only going to make you a better player or coach or executive or trainer or whatever you want to do, media side of things, right? Like there's so many opportunities in this great game that keep this community going. Referees are a big push right now because like the numbers are dwindling, right? So if there's anyone listening that's on the fence, go be a referee. It's a great way to stay connected to the football community. But you know, it doesn't have to be this adversarial approach. Like we should celebrate that we have this unique game in Canada. We're the only place, I think, in the world that plays 12-man football. That's fantastic. But there's huge load of other football leagues out there that you can be drawing. Oh, I like what that DB's doing. I like how he played that technique, or I like that scheme that coach drew up. And it's a little bit different because I'm coaching 12-man football, but I can adjust it accordingly. Or you know I oh I I like I like what that TV broadcast did, and they transitioned this way, and I like how their social media is run and this and that. There's so much opportunity out there that I think sometimes we get envious and kind of shut it out. But if you truly want to be the best version of yourself, you have to open yourself up to all angles of it, right? So many times people, like I said, the classic CFL fan, oh, I don't watch NFL. Well, you should. It's great football. But the other side of it, especially here in Ontario, I hear a lot of is, well, I'm an NFL fan. I don't watch the CFL. Well, you should. It's great football. Like, and they're not on at the same time. So I don't understand what you're missing, because you can enjoy football that much more. There's a game on all summer on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, right? Here in Ontario, we have three great CFL franchises, right? Out west, a little bit more spaced out, but here in province of Ontario, right? I'm sitting in London right now. There's two teams that you can go watch all summer long that's within driving distance. And then, when you come home on Sunday in the fall, the CFL only goes for Friday and Saturday, and you can watch those games too, and then you can watch the NFL all day Sunday. Like you can enjoy all of it. It's I don't understand why people claiming to be football junkies don't watch all of it, because it's that much more football.
Amen. Amen.
I love that attitude towards it, because more football is just better. And for, I made a joke about it the last time we were talking about a national combine, but for the people who are the NFL purists, as I say with quotations, they're waiting so much longer for football. Whereas if you watch the CFL and the NFL, you get regular season football in June and it doesn't stop until February. And now with the UFL, it starts up even earlier. So if you don't limit yourself, you can actually enjoy more high quality football damn near all year round here. So I love that take first and foremost here. With that stance, and with look, kind of looking at the CFL and looking at your own personal experiences with there, obviously, like you said, you had COVID, and that's a whole other animal in terms of all the things that it affected, whatever. But in that 2019 season, your first season with the Edmonton Elks, you guys go to the Eastern final. Now, obviously, end up losing to the Cats there, but you go damn near all the way to the Grey Cup. And then for the past few years, you've had your struggles, like you've said, and there's been a lot of excitement in the past year with Trey Ford getting a chance to come out there and doing his thing and bringing some excitement for the Elks and all that. What has your experience been like in that first year, like when you experienced going to that Eastern Final, having those senior leaders on your team, and then COVID happening and all of the other tribulations that you have gone through in there? Talk about that experience.
Well, I'll just say this. Success is not an accident. And when you have success, it's not an accident. When you don't have success, sometimes you're close, you're toying with things, things are new, things are not always, but it's not an accident. It's not this big fantastical thing that, you watch like Friday Night Lights or Remember the Titans, and it's like, oh, they came together in this magical moment. And no, it's like in 2019, the furthest that I've been able to get as a CFL player, it was just a really good locker room full of guys that had committed to the cause and that did the work. And we were I think our record that year was 8-10. We were a 500 football team, just under 500. And we snuck into the playoffs, Eastern crossover, won a big playoff game in Montreal, and ran out of gas in the East Final against a really good Hamilton team. 2021, because obviously 2020 got canceled. 2021, in a shortened season, start off 0-2. I think we stormed back to 2-2, and then just like it started to fall apart a little bit. But it wasn't because guys weren't trying. It wasn't because the leadership wasn't there. Sometimes you lose close games. Sometimes things just fall apart, and then the losses start to pile up, and it just that's when you really find out who a pro is, right? And that's when you find out like who the pros in the locker room are, because you know it's easy to be the rah-rah guy and show up early and stay late when you're winning all the time. When you're 4-10, can you show up early and stay late and put the same amount of work in to try and perfect your craft and win a game that week? And you know what? Over the last couple of years, we've had some turmoil, but I can confidently say that we have a great locker room in Edmonton currently. You know, last year the record didn't show it. We were 4-14, and you know, a lot of disappointed Elks fans, Edmonton fans out there about that. But I would say that, you know, the locker room exhibits that disappointment times 10. Like no one in that locker room was really happy that, oh, we're losing. That's, you know, that's not what we show up to do. Like I said earlier, you show up to win. Like we're away from our families. We're showing up every day. It's not like you get weekends. Like every day you're at the facility trying to pound out of a winning formula. And I'm really excited for this upcoming year because I know we have a good group of guys in that locker room, and you know, we're gonna fight like hell to scratch and claw and try and make a run at things. And you know, eventually the dam will break.
Scott, last thing I want to ask you about is just you've seen the game now at so many different levels, had success at every level. You have been participating in the game at and have had the opportunity to speak with some of the major stakeholders at pretty well every area of our game. We talked a little bit before we started recording some of the things that you're liking in U Sports, CFL, all those types of things. What's the Whether it's one change or one thing you really want to see in our game at any level, grassroots all the way up to the CFL, anywhere in between, that you think is a step that would be help continue move us in a great direction? Because I think we're there are people doing great things with our game right now, and it's awesome to see, especially coming off COVID now. But what's that one thing that you want to see our game take a step towards?
That's a tough one because we got all these different levels of football. I'm gonna take just one stab in the dark here. I know primarily you're an OUA focused podcast. I'm gonna say put the OUA game of the week back on TV. Gotta
Let's
get at
go.
least one game of the week. There's got to be someone out there that can do it. Someone out there listening with deep enough pockets. We got to get game of the week back on some sort of television, right? It's, you know, OUA TV is fine for some of the games, and you know, some schools actually do much better of a production job than other schools. Those that follow the OUA know exactly what I'm talking about. But you know, those old Score days, you know, when you had Tim McAuliffe calling games, game of the week on the Score. Is just a different level of excitement for that. And I really hope that can be something back in our future. And like I said earlier, I'm glad that my alma mater, Wilfrid Laurier, is reinvesting in some of their facilities. I hope that other universities across the province of Ontario and across Canada start to reinvest in some of their athletes. Because there is some really good athletic talent coming out of this country. And, you know, if you don't want people to, you know, just keep going south, then you got to give them good facilities and places to play.
Yeah, amen to that. Last thing that I will say to you, I promised that we would talk about it, and I have to ask you about it, the 2016 Yates Cup. As a player in that game and as one of, if not the greatest football games, certainly football finishes in of all time here, you're going into the fourth quarter and it's 40-19. What's the vibe like in that on the sidelines, even going into that game. You just come out beating me in my last game, like I said, 21-19. It's a close game, a very competitive game at Laurier Field. And you go to London, you're playing against them. And like I said, it's 40-19. What's the mentality like on the sideline? How are you guys still staying up, going up against one of the best teams in the country in their house and a team you had lost against in the regular season? How do you guys stay the course?
Well, personally, it was a great challenge because I remember Western's last touchdown to make it 40-19 was a screen pass to Harry McMaster, and yours truly was the one that missed the tackle, and he rips off like a huge 40-yard touchdown run on a simple screen pass that I should have tackled basically at the line of scrimmage. You know, and walking off the field and, you know, almost just like distraught and thinking, well, this was our chance. Like, we were going to win the Yates Cup. And, you know, now it's 40-19. But you got to stay in it. And there's still a lot of game left. And, you know, the offense makes a couple plays and, okay, boom, they go down there and score. Okay, you kick off. Go pin them deep. Defense comes back on the field. We get them 2 and out. All right. Offense goes back on, makes a couple more plays. All right, now they have another touchdown. And it's just one play at a time, one play at a time. It really was a very special game for all of those that were there that day. It was a crazy atmosphere. The whole stadium, our side of the stadium, was filled with Laurier fans. We had bussed down a bunch of students, and it really, the momentum started to shift from the Western side of the field, and you could feel it start to, you know, drop down, get nervous down here in the stands. And then these fans started to kick up over here, and it really was a really special moment. But when you're in it, you're not thinking about that. You're just thinking, I need to make my next play, because like we have them. Even when we were down a couple scores, you could feel it start to shift, and the feeling was, you know, we have them on their heels. You just need to keep executing play after play after play, because at that point there's no room for mistakes. There's no, you know, you're down three scores, there's no room for error. You need to keep making the plays over and over and over again. And, you know, it was nice to watch our offense just go to work and put up three scores in like 9 minutes or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then defensively, it was, you know, just trying to get stops and get our offense back the ball, 'cause they were cooking. Yeah, that was a great memory. Definitely a great win. Something that group of guys will be connected for life with.
My last question tied to that game. Oftentimes, especially when you're a player, in a lot of those big games, you can look back and maybe you didn't realize it as it was happening, but certainly when you look back at it, you realize, hey, that was a turning point, or that was the game right there. If we don't make that play, we don't have the opportunity. Does a moment like that stick out for you in that turning point of the game somewhere in there, or is it just a relentless never give up attitude that got you that dub?
One thing that's kind of lost in the ebbs and flows of time there is, I forget what touchdown it was that we had a blocked PAT, but Nakas Nyaka blocked a point after attempt on one of the Western touchdowns. And at the time we're down a bunch of scores. It didn't seem like a big thing, but like you mentioned, it was 40-19. That's a 21-point game with a blocked PAT somewhere in there. A 21-point game, not a 22-point game. So when we made that comeback, three scores, we didn't ever have to go for two. We just sent Nathan Mesher out there. No pressure, Nathan Mesher. Just put it through the uprights and, you know, give us the point after convert. And then, you know, he kicks the game winner and everything's great. But, yeah, definitely one of those really underrated plays that not a lot of people will ever notice or ever remember, other than the guys on that team that we all know that was a huge point.
There's just something about football player with the name Onyeka on the back, and you know you're in good hands, and you might be joined, if not actually on your team, at least as a part of the CFL fraternity, by another Onyeka in a few short weeks. But that will be seen in a little while. He's number 24, the Edmonton Elk, Scott Hutter via the Laurier Golden Hawks, and A.B. Lucas out of the London area. Scott, thank you so much for joining us, talking all about your experience through the draft, growing up playing football in London, and what your life has been like in the CFL. We really appreciate it. Best of luck as you approach returning to Edmonton for training camp.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for allowing me to come on here and talk about football. It's literally my favorite thing in the entire world to talk about. So I could do it for, you know, if you wanted to stay on here for many more hours and just talk football, I could probably rattle off a lot of content here, but you know, we'll just leave it here.
You're always welcome to join the At the 55 family, Scott, whether during your playing careers or when it all comes to a wrap. So we can talk about that as well. Perfect. All right, well, that's a wrap for our talk with Scott Hutter. We will continue on our draft stories journey as we head towards the 2024 CFL drafts. And we'll be talking to you right here at the 55.